Welcome to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3, and Happy New Year to you and yours. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. We're here every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. to bring you local news and also give you some national perspectives on things that are happening. And obviously, today's a big day in Georgia. We've got a runoff race for two Senate seats that are obviously going to have a huge impact on what happens nationally. And I was just looking at the two websites for the news websites for CNN and Fox News. CNN, big bold title, America in Crisis as Georgia Votes, and Fox News headline, America Holds Its Breath, and the polls are open in Georgia Senate runoff elections. And, you know, if you've been living in a cave, right now the Senate is 50-48 for the Republicans. Democrats, obviously, if things continue the way it looks like it's going to continue, Biden will be president. Democrats are in charge of the House. So this election in Georgia would make it, if the Democrats are to win those two elections, Senate seats would be 50-50 in the Senate, and that would be a lean to the Democrats because the vice president would break any tie. Now, there is also the obvious problem that Democrats would have holding all 50 senators in line to get to that tie. And this is where the West Virginia Senator Manchin comes into play, who is, he's made some pretty bold statements that, you know, he would not support some of these extreme progressive policies of packing the court and also, you know, approving statehood for D.C. and Puerto Rico. And there's been even talk that he maybe change, if it became 50-50, he would change his registration or change his party affiliation to Republican. He's from a state that went solidly to Trump in West Virginia. So I think there's a lot to be determined in the next couple of weeks from a national perspective, which is what everybody's looking at right now. And, you know, we'll keep up to date on it, but it's just the elections here, probably not going to know the results. If you look at all the polls, it's, you know, it's a toss up, just like when Biden has about 11,000 vote lead in Georgia that was certified. So that's obviously very close election, but I guess approximately 4 or 5 million votes. And the polls are showing the same thing for the Senate races, both Senate races. And so we'll just have to stay tuned and see what happens. You know, the older I've gotten, the less I am reacting to thinking I know what would happen if something else happens, like, you know, being very extreme or being very negative about an outcome. I think there's going to be margins. However, there are a lot of people that think that if the two senators for the Democrat side win in Georgia, that it's going to be, you know, a big swing to the left of the national government. And it's hard to see from a practical standpoint or from a theoretical standpoint, it's hard to see why it wouldn't move significantly to the left. If you see what the House did, you know, they're dealing with, you know, these issues of gender neutral language in the House rules. And so, I mean, it's something, this virtue signaling for all these progressive positions, I think would obviously continue. So anyway, I want to pivot here locally at the bottom of the hour. Now, this is something that we'll talk about it from a local perspective and a Florida perspective, but it is a national issue. You know, are all votes equal? That's what I want to talk about. And you might say, well, of course, all votes are equal. They are all equal when you count them, but is the process of voting equal? Does one person's vote, depending on the process they use in person or vote by mail, are they really equal? I want to go back and look. I want to go through some dynamics of the two processes compared. And this is one of the issues I think we're running into as a nation, is you hear a lot of talk about voter fraud. You hear a lot of the wild conspiracies. When I really think what we're seeing now is we're seeing expansion of the voting process to include more people. But in that process, when you start to include more people, you start expanding what is acceptable as a vote. And so I want to spend some time talking about that. So we'll do that at the bottom of the hour. In the next segment, I'm going to talk about quality of life issues here in Leon County. We've got some issues. Obviously, they're driven by a number of things, with the major issue being the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic. But, you know, it evolves around crime. violent crime, homelessness. It includes what is our law enforcement infrastructure doing in terms of, you know, are we able to hire more officers to deal with some of the issues we have? I want to run through some bullet point issues here that are starting to concern me as I look at this and try to cover it, talk to people behind the scenes. We get tips on things. And I'm telling you, we're going to have some quality of life issues here to deal with in the next 3 to 4 months. And I'm not sure, you know, exactly if the elected officials are on the same page. I'm not sure if the elected officials are on the same page with the infrastructure that's in place to deal with this. I know we've been sidetracked with having to deal with the pandemic. And so that's part of it. But in this next segment, we'll go into some detail about some things that are concerning and maybe give some, hopefully, be able to get some elected officials to comment on this and figure out exactly what their plan is. Because I think they're aware of the issue, but I'm not sure if they're moving in the right direction. Also, in our last segment, we'll have an update on the weekly COVID numbers. Not a good picture in terms of the increases in the things that we're tracking. We'll also have an update on some positive business news here in the community by one of the manufacturing companies that moved here a while back and employs quite a few people. So we'll tell you about that. I want to talk a minute about the vaccine rollout. Obviously, you know, as you know, the political atmosphere that we're in, it's, you know, there's always somebody to blame for something. And, you know, as you saw with the beginning of the COVID pandemic, trying to get the testing infrastructure in place. Now we've got the vaccine that nobody expected before the end of the year. Now it's here. And obviously the rollout is running into infrastructure issues, trying to get it to the people, to the high priority people first. Obviously we got it to the frontline, first aid people or the, first responders. Got the vaccines first, and now we're in this process of getting it to people who are over 65. And we're running into issues at the, you know, in all states here in Leon County, we're running into some issues, in terms of trying to get it done efficiently. But as a local official said here, this is the same problem we ran into with the COVID-19 testing infrastructure. It's going to take a little while to get this in place. And when it does get in place, it's going to move faster. I think we've, the number I saw when you start comparing Florida vaccinations nationwide, we're about in the middle of the percentage of people that have been vaccinated or the percentage of vaccinations that have been given out compared to what we have. So once again, though, if you're reading the print media or the legacy media here in Florida who just hate this governor, they are painting a very negative picture. And it's always somewhere in between. We've got issues. People are being vaccinated, and hopefully it will get more efficient as the infrastructure gets put in place. And that will be hopefully pretty soon, and we'll start seeing the impact on some of these, on these health outcomes that we're seeing, because we're having, we're in Leon County getting a big ramp up in the number of cases and the hospitalizations. And the vaccination, which obviously most people know takes two doses, we've gotten it started here, and we'll be looking for a more efficient infrastructure here, hopefully in the next couple of months. So that's sort of the update on some of the big issues around the country and here in the state. When we get back, we're going to talk about, like I said, quality of life issues here in Leon County and Tallahassee and some of the concerns that I think we should be focused on in the beginning of the year. My name's Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. I hope everybody enjoyed the cool weather. I know we were able to have some fires, which was nice. Obviously, the rain for a day and a half looked like it was so dark and rainy for a couple days. But then the good weather has returned, and I hope everybody is ready for a happy new year. Unfortunately, we'll turn to some quality of life issues that I think is going to have to be dealt with pretty early on in, you know, in 2021 here locally. And we're talking about crime, homelessness, those issues that really, you know, should be the top priority of any local government is, you know, public safety. And what we're seeing now is, and some of it obviously is due to the pandemic that is hopefully coming to an end here soon or within the, you know, some months. But it's a concern because Tallahassee is considered to be a small town. We're not a big city, but we're starting to see some of these big city problems. And, you know, obviously we've had issues with the pandemic. We've had the social justice upheaval throughout the country, which obviously touched Tallahassee. And I think we're, you know, one of the things that concerns me is that once habits get ingrained, things are allowed to happen, they become accepted. And, you know, we've talked about this. You know, we've gotten tips and calls and complaints about people camping out in vacant property, homelessness, panhandling at intersections that you didn't see before. And it seems to be just accepted right now because of the situation with the pandemic and other things. But, you know, it's starting to expand. Now, the city, you know, from what I understand, at Lake Ella actually tried to do something to make sure homeless people weren't sleeping on benches. I don't know what that was supposed to accomplish, but move them down the road to somewhere else. But this is something that, you know, we pay tax dollars for the government for local government to deal with this. I donate money to nonprofits like I'm sure other people do. It's not that I don't want to help people that are panhandling or are having an issue. What I don't want to do is promote activity or incentivize this activity. And so this is where local government has to come in with a plan and say, look, what are we going to do here? And I'm not sure that I've seen this. I've heard a lot of talk about affordable housing, but that's a longer term issue, and it's something that takes some planning. We got issues right now that I think are going to get out of hand in the next 3 or 4 months if we don't have a more focused local officials dealing with it. Now, I understand that, you know, in Leon County, Rick Miner, who's the chairman, has tried to bring this up with the North Monroe Quarter. This is in his district. And we see it here in the North Monroe area around I-10. All you got to do is look at the crime reports. And this is an area that is rifled with crime. And again, don't see a lot of plans to deal with this. The other thing is, you know, we're at the end of the year, we're going to get our final crime numbers in for the year, but I think it's already been sort of acknowledged by officials here that violent crime is up in Leon County. In addition, murders are up 34% here in Leon County. Last year, there were 21 murders. This year, it was up to 29 murders. Now, and you also, again, violent crime appears to be up. We don't know the exact numbers yet. But one of the things, you know, we're supposed to be, again, we're a small town. And when you start hearing officials say things like, well, this is the way it is all over the country. You know, this is due to the pandemic. We're supposed to be a little different here. You know, we don't have the sprawling, sprawling areas to regulate like other cities do or to have law enforcement cover. I mean, you know, you drive 20 miles out of Tallahassee and you're in the middle of nowhere. You drive 20 miles out of Jacksonville or Orlando or even Lakeland is more spread out, which is a town more our size. So we should be a little different. So I'm a little bit concerned when you see officials talking about blaming this on, well, you know, this is what's happening all over the country. I would hope we would be able to step up and maybe have numbers that are better than what's going all over the country. Now, it is true, murders all over the country actually are up about 30 to 35%, and that's what it is in Leon County. I don't think that's something we should be happy with just because we're at average with the rest of the country. The other issue that we see with the crime is if we start looking at our resources, we followed the number of people being arrested has been significantly down since the pandemic, and it hasn't really recovered. And so, you know, what are the dynamics behind that? Are we not arresting people that should be off the streets to equal the numbers that were happening before the pandemic? The other thing, we see that from January of last year to the end of this year, we have lost 22 patrol officers, or around 20 to 22 20 to 25 officers on the street. We see now that Chief Revel is like moving around officers now to more coincide with some of the crime issues that we have here in the town. So when you hear that talk, it's like they're moving people around because they don't have enough officers. So you're not arresting people. You don't have as many officers as you once had, a year ago. You see violent crime going up. You know, in an essence, what we're seeing is we don't have the resources. We, for whatever reason, our resources have, quote, been defunded in a way. It's because we can't hire people to take the job. I know that we right now have the police union is in a very stressed and controversial and contentious negotiation with the city of Tallahassee over their next contract. So that's an issue that is not getting a lot of coverage, but maybe impacting also of being able to hire more officers. So I don't see a lot of talk about this. I don't see this. I mean, we're going to have a city commission meeting coming up in a couple of weeks. We do get these, you know, safety updates, but we don't get, again, this is coming from within the city of Tallahassee. I know that we've got the independent police board that's being put together. I'll have to look into when they're holding some of their first meetings, because these are some of the issues they're going to need to be addressed. Because again, if you start looking across this county and you start looking at different neighborhoods, different areas of town, there's a huge change in the number of property and violent crimes in some of the areas here. And it's no secret to where they are, although the numbers would reveal maybe something that you're not aware of. But you would think that, you know, these law enforcement officials would be able to look at these numbers and put a dent into some of this. But again, if you go back to what they're falling back on is that, well, this is happening all over the country. We've got the COVID pandemic that we're having to deal with. And that's, you know, those are all true. But at the same time, are we doing what we need to be doing here locally? And again, it's something that I think if you start really following the data, it would start leading you into some directions. And the one that I'm concerned about now is the enforcement side of it. You know, we've had the social justice issues last year, and I just hope that this is not driving the lack of enforcement that we're, you know, we're starting to see with arrest, the number of officers that have fallen down in terms of numbers. But we get tips like, you know, that they don't have enough officers to enforce the traffic rules as aggressively as they have in the past. And they're telling us that, hey, you know, look for an increase in traffic accidents because they're not out patrolling aggressively enough as they have in the past because of a lack of resources. Now, we're not hearing this from the city of Tallahassee. We're not hearing this from the sheriff's department, but they are coming in through tips. And we're also seeing this in the numbers that I just told you about. So that's an issue that I think should be on the front burner of local government. And over the next couple of months, we'll get into the new year meetings. They're going to have the, you know, as they always do, the city will have their retreat. It'll be interesting to see if this is, you know, their top issue. And so will the Leon County. I'm sure that Sheriff Walt McNeil will speak there. But, you know, when you start saying that this is something you can't law enforcement your way out of, that may have been true 2 years ago, but I'm starting to think now that we're losing resources and we may need to address that before we can get to dealing with some of these other issues. So anyway, we'll keep you up to date on this issue. When we get back, we're going to talk about, are all votes equal? Stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold.
Thank you.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. We talked earlier about the voting that's going on in Georgia. Obviously, there's also on January 6th, the Electoral College is supposed to be certified in Washington, D.C. And there's been all kind of talk about voter fraud across the country with these close elections that we've had over the last couple of years. And so I wanted to talk about this. And one of the things I've been looking at, you know, and I've asked myself this question, are all votes equal? And, you know, there's been a lot of discussion, again, about the voting fraud. You hear in the presidential election, you hear a lot of talk about people changing machines so that they add votes to one side or the other, and talking about people moving ballots around. And, you know, some of these accusations are wilder than others. People talk about the impact of vote by mail. But what if it's not about fraud? It's just about the process that's in place, or the process that we have arrived to now. And so let me explain. It used to be that vote by mail was called absentee voting, and it was relegated to people who were in the military, who were periodically out of town, away from their voting place, so they could request an absentee ballot. Also, it was used by people who couldn't get to precincts, elderly people who had health issues. And it was rare. Absentee balloting made up a very small percentage of the overall voting. Now, if we fast forward, vote by mail has been changing over the years to begin with. But with the COVID-19 pandemic, vote by mail has become much more of a thing, because obviously you didn't want people being close to each other. And the argument was that if they voted in these precincts, that would facilitate the spread of COVID, and people were scared about going to vote. So we've expanded a vote by mail, given more time to get ballots to people to vote. And so that now was an issue in this election. Now, some states have expanded vote by mail and the process, like in California, which includes people to actually pick up ballots once they have been requested and sealed up by the people who are voting. And, you know, that also has been an issue, because that expands the process of vote by mail, and it makes it a little bit less secure. Now, we've seen the lack of security in vote by mail. I mean, experts will tell you that vote by mail is not as secure as voting in person. And all you got to look, we had an election in North Carolina that was overturned because of vote by mail fraud. Now, obviously, that's on a smaller scale. But as vote by mail expands in these federal elections, the question would be, given the changes in the process, are these, you know, is a vote by mail vote equal to an in-person vote? And let me explain. So for in-person voting, a voter shows up and has his or her driver's license scanned. The voter signs a log and is given a ballot to fill out. And they take that ballot without interference, and they go and fill it out away from other people, and then they feed it into a ballot counter. So once they get the ballot, nobody else sees the ballot, touches that ballot, or talks to them. Now, on the other hand, let's look at the vote by mail process. In theory, vote by mail, a voter says, hey, I don't want to vote in person. I'm going to request a ballot. The person receives the ballot, which is sent through the mail. They get the ballot they can hold it for a couple of days. They vote, and then they return the ballot via mail, and their vote is counted. Now, that's the perfect process without outside interference. Now consider what is happening and being promoted by some laws in other states. Organizations with financial resources are funding local groups to identify people that don't vote regularly, and they're influencing them to request a ballot. The people with these organizations that have the funding, they track the arrival, they track the request and the arrival of the ballot, and then they show up at their door to retrieve the ballot and take it to, quote, a drop box or a supervisor of election office. Now, the question is, we don't know what happens between them requesting the ballot and it being put in that drop box. Now, there used to be some rules that protected vote by mail. It used to be only you could request it, only you could either mail it in through the mail or you could drop it off. But now, given some of the issues with COVID, those rules are being waived or even the rules are being changed to allow people to pick up these ballots. And that is so that is allowing these vote by mail ballots to be in a situation where they can be manipulated. So my question is a vote in person vote the same as or as secure as a vote by mail ballot? It's clear if you look at the process, they are completely different. One is much more open to manipulation. So when you hear these wild accusations of voter fraud, and right now, this year, it's coming from the conservative side, one of the things that I think is a problem here is we're talking about, you know, to make the news, you got to make these wild claims that you hear that, you know, voter machines are being changed, thousands of ballots are being created. Now, that may be happening. We haven't seen major proof of that a judge has agreed to. But I will tell you that what is in place with regards to this voting process is that there's no doubt what's happening. And let me give you an example. In Fulton County, where there's concern now about the voting integrity, there was a consent decree or a stipulation in Fulton County that was signed put into effect by the Secretary of State of Georgia that allowed some of these vote-by-mail processes to be in place. There are 36 drop boxes across Fulton County that allows people to drop off ballots, I think it was 24 hours a day. So the question would be, if you have a law that says that only you can return your absentee ballot, how are you enforcing that if there are these drop boxes all around Fulton County? How do you know that there aren't people going around and collecting ballots and putting them in these drop boxes? Now, is that voter fraud or is that just stretching the rules? And I think this is the issue that we're going to run into. And I think for us to reach the point to where we have everybody on the same page and we have voter integrity, we're going to have to get a handle on these voter laws. The problem with this is as follows. Republicans were all for vote by mail when the demographic that was using vote by mail was older and favored Republicans. Now it appears that Democrats or progressives have figured out how to use vote by mail to their advantage. You're never going to get the two parties to agree when one of them has an advantage. And so this is going to actually be an appeal to a common sense voter or to the moderate voters. Do you think that the process should be this? Do you think that vote by mail, which allows people to go in and request a absentee ballot for someone and then meet that ballot at the door and then talk to them about who they should vote for, take that ballot, and then go next door and grab another ballot, and return those. Do you think that's a process that has integrity? Or would it be better to go ahead and say, listen, we're going to have 2 weeks to vote. We're going to have all our precincts are going to be open 12 hours a day. We encourage in-person voting. If you are out of town or if you have a medical disability, you can vote by mail, but other than that, we have to do in-person voting, and we have to make it available to people so for a period of time to where nobody's that wants to vote can vote. You know, that's going to be where we're going to have to go if we want to get on the same page with people having confidence in the integrity of our elections. When we're to the point of we're putting out drop boxes around counties and we don't know who's putting the ballots in those drop boxes, I think you're always going to have a problem. So it's going to be interesting to watch these state legislatures to see how they deal with it and to see if we get any movement at the federal level trying to make sure that there are consistent, equal laws in federal elections across all 50 states. You know, again, getting people to agree to the parameters, I think, will be difficult. But if we don't, we're going to continue to have this problem with voter integrity. All right, that's my diatribe on are all votes equal. It'd be great to hear any comments from our listeners on this. And when we get back, we will update you on the weekly COVID numbers and give you some positive business news here locally in Leon County. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold.
Your everlasting summer, you can see it fading fast. So you grab a piece of something that you think is gonna last.
Welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. Happy New Year. Bye. Weekly COVID update. Not good news for the new year, I'm sorry to say. If you're following our story, we do a weekly report that ends on each Sunday, and to summarize the trends. I like looking at trends versus the daily numbers. And so we track hospitalizations, cases, hospitalizations, and the positivity rate. And so we've seen some real movement increases over the last 2 weeks. For the week ending January 3rd, cases, 7-day average numbers are up 48% in Leon County. For the hospitalizations have spiked. They're up 43% this last week. They have risen above the previous peak back in August. Positivity rates are still below the peak back in September of a little over 15%, and they are a little less than 10% now. But again, they have peaked. I guess over the last 2 weeks, they're up 57%. Very concerning, obviously, because you know one of the things that I was holding out hope for is that the hospital is, you know, as cases go up is one thing because people start to figure out what their risk is. Unfortunately, younger people say, you know, I don't have anything to really fear from this. And so the cases would go up, but the hospitalizations would stay down because the people that are taking the risk, they don't have bad outcomes. But that is obviously, you know, we start looking at the hospitalization numbers that are spiking here. There are people that are at risk for this virus that are, I guess, not heeding the call, you know, to distance themselves. Are I guess not concerned. So the other issue here would be if we've seen this spike. I mean, the last 2 weeks we've seen hospitalizations go up about 150%. And so, you know, what would follow after that is if history is any indication of the future is, you know, we're going to see a spike in deaths here in Leon County. So we'll keep an eye on that, and I hope we can get this vaccine infrastructure worked out relatively quickly because it looks like, you know, people, again, from the holidays, people are not following the advice. People that are at risk are not following the advice that is, or the not just really advice. If you look at the numbers, if you're over 65, you got to be careful. If you've got a health condition, you need to be careful. And, you know, you think you would know who you are, and then you would try to say, listen, I don't want to get this because I can end up in the hospital or worse. Doesn't seem to be the case here in Leon County and in much of the state because, you know, if you look at our state numbers, the hospitalization numbers also is starting to peak. Nothing like it was more of a gradual peak statewide. This last 2 weeks is a dramatic impact on the hospital resources here in Leon County. Again, up, I'd say over 150%. So those are the not so positive numbers here that we've been experiencing over the last couple of weeks as it relates to the COVID numbers. All right, a little more positive news on the economic front. There's a Danfoss Turbocor who's been a great partner and business partner here in Leon County for, I guess, over 20 years now. Press release indicates that They will expand with a new advanced manufacturing facility and create over 200 high-wage jobs in Tallahassee. For those who don't know, Innovation Park is a collaboration between FSU, FAMU, TCC, and both local governments, Leon County and the city of Tallahassee, and private sector leaders striving to drive innovation in certain areas, which are focused on magnetics, aeropropulsion, materials, energy, health, and life sciences. And so, you know, it's been a little bit stagnant out at Innovation Park over the number of years. One of the shining stars has been Danfoss TurboCore. This project that they have unveiled is going to be a multi-million-dollar investment in a new 65,000 to 90,000 square foot facility to be built on 16 acres of land. The project will create 239 high-wage jobs in manufacturing and research and development over the next several years. They estimate the economic impact of the expansion is going to be $140 million, creating 367 construction-related jobs and 586 permanent jobs. So the new facility is going to expand the Danfoss current 125,000 square feet presence at Innovation Park, which includes engineering and manufacturing operations. The good news is that I think Danfoss TurboCore had an option or a decision to make about leaving the area, but they've decided not to. And so, you know, that's all good news here. The chair of the Innovation Park is quoted as saying, "Businesses are the economic engine of our community. And just like the great success being evidenced through our partnership supporting Danfoss expansion, Innovation Park is uniquely positioned with its highly trained staff, resources, and facilities to continue playing a significant role in supporting startups and existing businesses and attracting new business to the community." So, you know, again, one of the criticisms of Innovation Park is that Danfoss TurboCore has sort of been the only shining star. And this is, again, another example. You know, their expansion hopefully is something that they'll be able to leverage in using as an example of why people or companies, manufacturing specifically, should move to Tallahassee. And, you know, look, over the next year, I think that our community is going to have some of these opportunities if we can get some of these quality of life challenges under control. Because as we have talked about on this show previously, you know, what has happened over the last year in terms of the social justice upheaval and the COVID pandemic, there are a lot of people now that are looking to move from some of these bigger cities. And, you know, the two places that they're choosing to move is Texas and Florida. And so I think this is an opportunity for Tallahassee, again, I don't want to say to rebrand. I guess the better word would be to reintroduce, you know, the community and what we have to offer to these businesses and these individuals who are looking for a new place to land. And, you know, again, if you look at our numbers on home sales, we've noticed a huge increase in the price of resales, which means there's high demand. That has increased over the last 3 or 4 months. And so we need to get this to translate into the business community, so that we can get some new opportunities to not only have new jobs, but jobs that would that are going to allow us to diversify our economy, which is so focused right now on education and government and healthcare. A good shot of private sector jobs would do wonders for our local economy. So I think that, again, this goes back to where we started our show with, is that it's really important for local officials to address these challenges we're facing with quality of life numbers, and then take advantage of the opportunities that I think we're going to see coming down the pike because of these major changes nationally and around the world that are causing people and companies to change the way they're doing business. And so we'll have to keep an eye on that and see if we do take advantage of it, because, hey, this is the perfect example of this economic development money that we voted on for Blueprint. You know, here is an opportunity this year for our community to separate ourselves out. We're in a state that has great economic opportunities from people wanting to move here. So can we separate ourselves out? A lot of work to do, but we have the opportunity. So, all right, that's a wrap for today. We'll be back on Thursday to get you up to date. Hopefully I'll have some more information on some crime numbers that we're working on to give you a clear picture of what's going on here. So, all right, let's get off to a great start here with this new year. Again, I appreciate you tuning in, and we'll be here on Thursday. I'm Steve Stewart. You've been listening to Above the Fold.
Living in a lonely world, she took the midnight train going anywhere. Just a city boy, born and raised in South Detroit. He took the midnight train going.